The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Did you know that parents rank teaching financial literacy as the toughest life skill? That's where Greenlight comes in, the debit card and money app made for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and track spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn how to earn, save, and spend responsibly, while parents have peace of mind knowing smart money habits are being built with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight. That's greenlight.com/trygreenlight.
Fucking hell. Fucking took a turn.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
Sports commentators. Bunch of bastards. Yes or no?
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
They just chat a load of shit. They know no more than I do. Well, maybe a little bit more than I personally do.
Well, no, they do know more, but...
Well, it's debatable.
So the two sports I watch mainly is boxing and speedway. It's usually ex-boxers or ex-speedway riders who are commentators.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a speedway commentator... I can't remember his name now, but he died a couple of years back.
Oh.
He did the commentary for darts as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I can't remember his name. I know you're on a boat, yeah.
Yeah. He was grand. He was okay. And then there's another commentator who used to commentate with him called Kelvin Tatum. Now, he was a speedway rider. He was a really good speedway rider. Some of the shit, what comes out of his mouth, like... Right, so there's a rider called Chris Harris, who's British. And then there's a speedway rider called Chris Holder, who's Australian.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a speedway race the other day, and Chris Holder was riding. And he rode around the outside of someone and took the lead on the race. And Kelvin Tatum is there. What a move by Chris Harris. And it's like, Chris Harris isn't even in the meeting. He's not even riding tonight. So even getting the names wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something I've noticed. Now, I don't want to be too harsh on people because I'm no good with pronunciations.
Yeah, but it's like when they're getting spent, like when they're getting paid some good money, at least get the fucking name right.
No, I know what you're saying, but it's more difficult than you think. I will read something, yeah?
Yeah.
But when I'm reading it, before I've looked up the pronunciation, I'll get in my head of what I think the name is.
Yeah.
And as I'm typing, I'll keep saying it that way in my head. Then I look up the pronunciation and I'll be like, right, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I go to read it, it's like, no idea. It's completely gone.
Yeah.
And for them, it is live. So it's a little bit more of a bollocks.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's also like as someone Irish, I get very annoyed with the Brits.
Yeah.
Because they cannot pronounce Irish names at all. Which, look, some of them are more difficult, but you're used to a lot of them by now. I mean, the UK is infested with Irish.
Yes.
So, come on, lads.
I'll tell you something else, right? There's a couple more things with Kelvin Tatum.
Oh.
Right, you've poked the bear here now.
Oh.
Right? He likes to try and make catchphrases and tries getting them to land. And they never fucking do, but he'll continue to use them.
Oh, is this a bit of a that's so fetch kind of guy?
Right, hang on, let me think of one. That's racing out of the top drawer. It's like, what does that mean? What does that fucking mean?
Yeah, he's kind of just trying to
combine some things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what he'll do, and I'm deadly serious with this, people can fucking look it up on YouTube. I bet it comes up. If he's covering a meeting, if he's doing the commentary,
mm-hmm.
before the meeting starts, he will walk out onto the track with a cameraman, with his dirt-o-meter. Do you know what his dirt-o-meter is?
Go on.
A fucking screwdriver. He digs it into the track and goes, look, yeah, look at that dirt. Look, like that's where they want to be riding. And it's like, what do you mean dirt-o-meter? It's a fucking flat blade screwdriver. Are you taking the fucking piss?
Yeah.
Another one, he's been saying it for years. No idea. I've been going to Speedway all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know what he means when every time he says this. Yeah, he gets in that high line. I don't know what he means by high line. Nobody does. I've asked.
Is he like trying to say like a slipstream type of thing? Is that what he
No mean? Idea. Absolutely no idea. Be like, yeah, get into that high line. It's baffling.
Do you know what it is? Because I'm not into like sports. The only thing I like is darts, really.
Yeah.
But I've watched loads of football over the years with my dad and stuff.
Yeah.
Big fan. And obviously Speedway with you, boxing, all that.
Don't even get me started on boxing.
Well, it's something I've noticed. So I'm listening to them talk and I could be watching the fight or the game or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'll be kind of like, no, that doesn't seem to match up to me, but I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And then I'll say to you or my dad or whatever, and it's kind of like, no, I don't know what they're fucking on about. Talking through their arse. And I'm like, yeah, I thought so. Fucking knew it. They just like, and it's like they like the sound of their own voice.
Yeah.
You know?
They're there to amp it up and try and get more, like...
They do. I'm getting fucking amped up, sat on my sofa, listening to them.
No. Like, so say if you've never watched Speedway before and you're flicking through the channels and you land on the Speedway Grand Prix.
Yeah.
The commentators are there to like hold you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why... Even if it's a shit race, there's about 2 miles between every rider and they'll be like, oh, he's on his back wheel. And it's like, he's nowhere near his fucking back wheel.
Mm.
But I can see what you're fucking doing. But yeah, boxing, don't even get me started, right? The last big fight I watched was Katie Taylor against Amanda Serrano, their third fight. Now, I them fights have made me give up watching boxing. Like, it's disheartened me.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Taylor and Amanda Serrano, they fought the first time. Serrano slapped the shite out of her around that ring. Lost on points. Didn't know where that came from. That's judges. That's not commentators.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get back to commentators. Second fight, exactly the same. Serrano slapped the shit out of her. Lost on points. Fought the third time. Now, third one was a much closer fight. But what the commentators did on all three fights, you could tell they wanted Katie Taylor to win. So they was bigging up anything Katie Taylor did and downplayed anything or completely ignored anything Amanda Serrano did. There was one round, Serrano landed a 4-punch combo. Commentators fucking said nothing about it. Katie Taylor threw a right hook, hit Serrano's glove, and we're like, oh, what a hook.
Ooh.
It's like, are you taking the fucking piss?
Mm.
It hit a glove. You can see it hit a glove.
Boxing's really bad for it, I feel.
It's horrific. It's just getting worse.
Well, it's like you said, you know, oh, there's people who are experienced and do know about it.
Yeah.
But they're all paid off.
Yeah.
They're all, do you know what I mean? They're all on the fucking agenda here.
Yeah.
You know? Which, for you, as a fan of boxing, I bet it pisses you off if it's a fighter that you've always admired, loved, and then you see them just... You know, taking that payout to say some shy talk's brilliant, but
yeah. Well, there's a lot of fighters who I could name now, no one would have heard of them because they never made it.
Mm.
They were really, really good, but they just never made it because they didn't know how to play the game. They didn't know the right people.
Mm.
Doesn't matter what sport you're in, how good you are, you have to know the right people.
Yeah, same with most things in life.
Yeah, you've poked the bear here. With sports commentary.
Yeah, I thought that was just going to be like, yeah, they're a bunch of shy talks and move on. But no, it's triggered something in you, hasn't it?
Yeah, because you've got to imagine, right? Say you've trained full-time hard for one fight, 6 weeks. You've been in that training camp for 6 weeks. You've been away from your family, everything. You've gone into that fight. You've fought your heart out, got robbed on the decision. And it's like, right, okay, I was fighting away from home. I knew that could be a possibility. But then every fighter will watch back that fight. And you imagine hearing the commentators and it's like, they didn't even give a shit about me.
That's something I think about quite often too with boxing actually is, you know, with the commentary and the media surrounding the fight, how it rewrites history of a boxer's legacy. You know, whether they're pumping them up or knocking them down to their actual ability. Yeah.
But yeah, for our listeners, if you think I'm lying, Megan, you can do it later. Go on YouTube and search Speedway Dirtometer. And he'll fucking come up digging his screwdriver into the fucking track.
Mm.
Knobhead.
Do you know another one I don't like, just on the Speedway note?
Mm.
Ty,
do you know Kelvin Tatum used to ride with?
Who?
Kenny Carter.
They
were like British pairs and stuff like that.
Mm. And I was going to say another one that I don't like with them is with Ty Woffenden.
Yeah.
The way they're always, what is it they call him? Woofy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woofy. Yeah.
It's Woff.
Yeah.
Where are you getting Woff from?
Well, some people say Woffenden.
It feels to me like they're trying to shoehorn in. And it's a bit like us with the shout outs, if I'm honest with you. They're really, really trying to make it happen. And it's not working, lads. Leave it be.
Speaking of shout outs, we have one.
We do.
So we've got a new patron. Jody.
Joe Dye.
See, you're close to what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So in Ireland, there's a website, joe.ie. And I thought, oh, Jody.
Joe.ie.
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 Just there's the D and there then the is. IE.
Mm.
There she is.
there she is. There's the guy. Do you know what else I was thinking of?
What?
Jojo. Leave. Get out. That's the end of you and me.
I love them songs when I were a kid.
Was that the next lyric? That's the end of you and me? Is that what it was?
I can't remember.
She had another one. I can't remember the name of it.
She's dead now.
No, she's not dead.
She is.
We had this conversation before.
She's dead.
She's not dead. Neil, right, lads.
I got a notification. Jojo dead.
Mortals, this is something I have to deal with quite a lot. Neil is quite gullible and naive. And he will, if something pops up on Facebook or what have you, he will just take it as fact. He would just go with
it. It was trending. Jojo dead.
It wasn't Jojo the singer that we grew up with. It's not her.
Who were it then?
I don't fucking know. But it wasn't, it's not, Jojo isn't dead.
Well, I don't know another Jojo.
She just subscribed to our Patreon. No, but you did this to me before, years ago, nearly 10 years ago, you came over to me and you went, oh my God, look, Kim Kardashian dead, age 21. I was like, well, first of all, she's not 21. And second, she's not fucking dead. And when I looked at the article you were showing, I was like, Neil, look at this. Look at this rag that you're trying to pass off as genuine reporting. Anyway, a little bit off track there. Thank you, Jody. Joe.e. We appreciate you.
Cheers, Jojo.
Oh, also, while we're on shoutouts, we did notice that one of our patrons got a bit robbed of a shoutout.
Yeah, that's my bad. With the editing.
Yeah, yeah. Once we listened to it back, we noticed it was kind of a bit cut off.
Yeah.
All you got was KK.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we usually try to go.
She was 1K short from.
No, we don't really go there. We're not really talking about that today in this episode. Yeah.
You don't know what I was going to say.
I could take a guess. Also, that's not really a great shout out. You don't really want that association, do you? No, not so much. So we decided to look up your name, didn't we? And the definitions given to us for the name Kayla were slender and fair.
And it's short for Michaela. Mick.
Mick. We're going with Mick now, are we? Slender. Slender man.
Yeah. Fair.
Slender man's fair.
Like a fair ass.
A fair arse.
White ass.
See, I was going to say something like she's a very fair person.
Oh.
But you had to talk about her arse. Maybe we shouldn't have revisited the shout out.
Yeah.
It's gone awry.
Yeah. We apologise for wasting your time.
Mm.
So, with the insults and everything out of the way, what you got for us today?
Today we're going to be talking about Javed Iqbal, also known as Kukri.
Okay. English?
No.
Right.
We're going to Pakistan today.
Okay.
Never been to Pakistan, both in real life or on the podcast.
You don't really hear much about, like, serial killers or anything like that over there.
I feel like with countries that, you know, aren't the United States of America with the murders, you kind of, you don't hear about them as much, but when you do, it's a doozy of a case.
No, but you still hear about cases in like Canada, the UK, Ireland, stuff like that. I can't think of Japan, you know, but I can't think of any what I've heard. What, like Pakistan, India, Saudi Arabia?
But that's what I mean. Like, they're not kind of at the forefront. Yeah. I don't feel, you know, like, obviously the US is rife with serial killers and what have you. But when it's a country like Japan, they're not, you know, one of the heavy hitters, in at least in my mind, in case I come across. But when you do, it's like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. You wouldn't really hear of them now in China. Like, you lose points for crossing the road the wrong way and stuff. So there's big risks for big punishments and risks in China.
I mean, that is part of it, depending on the country, how severe the punishment is. Well, it can be. I mean, if you look at Ireland, there's punishments aren't that bad. And we still don't have a huge amount. A lot of ours are kind of gang related.
Yeah. But even with your cases like Larry Murphy, you just shipped him off to the UK.
We did, yeah. Yeah. Your problem now. Javed Iqbal was born in 1961 in Lahore, Pakistan. He was the sixth of eight children born to his parents. His father was a businessman, and Javed enjoyed a more comfortable upbringing, with items such as a 200cc motorbike gifted to him by his father as a teenager.
Oh, fuck me. Do you know what I got? A stick.
A stick.
Yeah, see how far you can throw it.
Fuck off. I know what your Christmases were like. You were one of those households where it was mountains of presents.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, but what?
Like, yeah, I would, but it weren't like big, expensive
I can
presents.
See you searching, like racking your brain to think of a justification for it right now.
Like,
yeah,
the best present I ever got when I was a kid was the Megazord, Power Ranger Megazord.
Mm-hmm.
If I still had that now, I'd be able to sell it for thousands. But yeah, my Megazord. And my wrestling ring and all my little wrestlers.
A big one for me was Barbie.
Barbie. Knew that
Barbie.
Would
come in. No, I love me Barbie.
Mm.
I remember, I think it was my grandparents, they gave me and my brother a tractor each. Not an actual tractor, like a toy tractor.
Oh.
I had a green one, he had a blue one. In 1978, while still in college, Javed followed in his father's footsteps and started his own business of steel recasting. He ran his business out of his villa located in Shadba that his father had purchased for him. Now, this villa, Javed lived there along with multiple boys.
Oh.
Boys who he had hired to work for him or boys who he wanted to keep close by.
Oh, okay. What? I thought you were going somewhere else.
Yeah.
I thought you were going like the Gacy route.
Although Javed's family were eager to arrange a marriage for him, this was something that he was not interested in and was quite obstinate about. So it truly shocked his family when in 1983, Javed announced that he was getting married. The bride-to-be was the older sister of one of the boys who Javed shared the villa with. Of course, this was all a part of his plan. A manipulation to keep this boy close. The marriage would only last for a few months.
So, can I make an assumption?
Mm-hmm.
Was he into fellas?
Yes.
Okay. That's the vibe I'm getting. Well, at least now he can enjoy himself. Back, you know, back to being single. That bachelor lifestyle.
In 1990, a man filed a complaint with the police against Javed for sexually abusing his son.
Fucking hell. fucking took a turn.
Without being able to apprehend Javed, his father and his two brothers were detained. 8 days later, police arrest one of the boys who lived with Javed. Javed didn't seem too fazed by the detention of his father or brothers, but the boy being arrested did anger him. He surrendered to police in order for this boy to be released. For his crime, Javed served 6 months.
What?
Yeah.
6 months for what he did to the bloke's son?
Mm-hmm, for sexual assault.
So basically, their criminal justice system's the same as the UK?
Not quite.
Oh.
We'll get into it. For the assault of another young boy, the matter was brought before the elders of the area. He confessed and was made to sign an agreement that he would not commit any further offences. Copies were made of the agreement and distributed, as well as Javed being ordered to visit 100 shops in the area and apologise for his actions. What? So, other than being publicly shamed, Javed was essentially getting away with his crimes.
Just had to sign a few fucking papers. Pretty much. Will not do that again. Do you know what it is? It's Bart Simpson writing on the fucking blackboard at the beginning of an episode.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, yeah, it's two lines, really.
What the fuck?
Yeah. In 1993, Javed's father passes away. And without Daddy's influence to protect him, locals took the opportunity to seek revenge for what he was doing to these boys. And the next time he chose to hurt a child, he was thrashed by the residents of Shadbagh.
Thrashed? They're like, kick lumps at him.
Lashed, like.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fucking dated there then, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
you take disagree? A kicking.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to leave some fucking marks on you. That's going to break open your skin if you know what you're doing.
Did you know what would do more damage? Cricket bat.
Cricket's quite popular in Pakistan, so.
Yeah.
Where's like the biggest places? Like India, Pakistan, England?
Australia.
Oh, yeah, Australia, they love it as well.
Mm.
They're like the big boys of cricket.
Yeah.
Mm.
Couldn't give a fuck. I think they're the only boys of cricket.
Couldn't give a fuck about cricket myself.
No.
The only time I ever had to do it was school, and then as soon as that was over.
I have a funny story about cricket. So, I'm sorry, this is me spiralling.
How do you have a funny story about cricket?
Oh, it's a good one. Oh, no, it's a good one. Right, so you know I'm a bit thick, right? So, we were going to Speedway, at a place called Buxton, middle of fucking nowhere. And it took about an hour and a half to get there. And you'd always go past this cricket field in this little village.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have like a proper big game. It was like a proper stadium. But the road were right next to it. It was a weird, weird setup. And we were as we were coming round the corner, my dad did it the first time. Me and my brother thought it was hilarious. So then all three of us were doing it and my mum would
not impressed.
Pissed off. Yeah. So there was one time we came round the corner. You can ask my dad about this. Came round the corner. My mum had already pre-warned my dad, lock the window, lock the car windows,
mm-hmm.
so he can't put the window down. So I opened the door, and we used to shout, no ball, you bastards, and then drive off. And it'd proper, like,
echo,
disrupt the game.
Okay.
It'd, like, stop the game. But this time, my dad drove around the corner. I couldn't open the window, so I was like, nah. So I opened the door and shouted, no, screamed it as loud as I could, no ball, you bastards. And then all of a sudden...
Stopped at a red light. Yeah.
All of a sudden, car stopped. And I looked, was sat in traffic next to the fucking cricket field. And my dad was just there. You fucking idiot.
Was this kind of like an in-betweeners bus wankers moment?
Yes.
Yeah.
My dad was just like, you fucking idiot.
Did any of them come over? Or?
No.
No. Close call, though.
Yeah. Mm. No ball, you bastards. And then if we went past a golf course, we'd scream four. We'd just keep screaming four.
Yeah, I think everyone's done that one. Mm.
So back to Pakistan.
So with the death of Javed's father, he may have lost his protection. But one thing that he did have was a hefty inheritance left by his father. 3.5 million rupees. So with his newfound wealth, Javed decided to use his inheritance not only to build a swimming pool at his villa and the purchase of multiple vehicles, but to further his sinister intentions. Javed decided to open a video game shop, and who loves video games?
Boys.
I was going to say kids, but yeah.
Well, more boys than girls.
I don't really agree with you there. I think they're just marketed more towards boys.
Well, no, you look at the industry revenue from something like Call of Duty, GTA, FIFA's, stuff like that. When you was a kid, right, when Megan was a kid, her father went out and bought a Playboy Mansion, the game.
I love that game.
Playboy Mansion.
It's terrible. Terrible that game was even made. But at the time, you know, I was just playing. It's basically like The Sims. It's The Sims with nudity.
Huh.
I don't think my dad realised.
You can do that with Sims.
You can get mods and stuff, yeah. But I don't think my dad realised just how graphic it was at the time. But yeah. No, but I do think, especially as someone, you know, as a woman who's played video games, you are treated a certain way. Like you're a fucking unicorn, which I don't actually understand why.
Mm.
There are so many women and girls who play video games, but men still kind of view it as like, you know, you're the minority coming in here.
Nudity in games, the first one I can remember, Lara Croft. Lara Croft.
That wasn't nudity.
There was a glitch you could do to strip her off. Mm.
You spent hours staring at that screen, didn't you, Neil?
And then there was Duke Nukem, Time to Kill. I think there were tits in that. Actually, one what was a bit disturbing. So me and Megan, we used to play a game called Skyrim. Big open world.
What, you're saying that as if it's like this little indie game called Skyrim.
A lot of people didn't play it.
Oh, fuck off. Everyone knows Skyrim.
Okay. So, yeah. We would put like YouTube videos on to watch Skyrim. And then I started watching people mod Skyrim. So I learned how to mod Skyrim. And I was on the website where you'd get the mods and I was looking. How many times did I turn to you and go, look at this?
Mm. A lot of people wanted Lydia in the buff.
Well, it weren't just Lydia in the buff. It was, you could have sex parties on like... with other characters, you'd direct them what to do and...
Like, lads, can we just... Like, I mean, Playboy was what it was.
Telling me that info, lads?
I'm not defending the game now. I'm just saying at the time, you know, like we discussed it in the episode about the murder of Jasmine Fiore, that, you know, Playboy had a grip on the fucking world. It was a universe. Mm. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the game is what it is.
Yeah.
It's about adult content. Whereas stuff like that, it's like, it's Skyrim. Like, come on, lads.
And you'd have characters like lizards.
Khajiits.
That's what, well, they were cats.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So you'd have like a lizard fucking a cat. Or a lizard and a cat fucking a woman.
There's no need for it.
It was...
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
Creations of a madman. Anyway, bit off topic.
Mm.
Javed opened a video game shop to attract kids. But when people in the area stopped their kids from going to the store, knowing his intentions, he decided to open an aquarium and also a gym. He later set up a school, but of course, no one wanted to send their kids to attend. He then opened a general store, which undercut the prices of others in the area. He also spent his money on the publication of a magazine. Now, this magazine focused on crime and the incredible work of the police force. Through boosting their egos, this enabled Javed to establish a relationship with over 24 officers.
I was just about to say, he's brown nosing.
Yeah.
Sucking up to the cops.
Knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
Aside from his elaborate schemes to lure young boys into his grasp, Javed would also perpetrate less time-consuming ruses. He would place a 100 rupee note on the ground and wait for a boy to pick it up. Javed would accuse him of stealing and take him to be searched, where he would then sexually assault the boy. On some occasions following the assault, Javed would give the boy the money as a, quote, gesture of goodwill.
You mean to keep his gob shut?
Yes. You see, Javed would target children affected by poverty, those who work selling goods in the street, or kids who had run away from home. And more often than not, these children were, and still are, overlooked. With the offer of work and or a seemingly luxurious lifestyle to the one they had been used to, Javed was able to manipulate and coerce quite a few boys to stay within his company. In December of 1999, police as well as a local newspaper receive a letter. Quote, "I have killed 100 beggar children and put their bodies in a container. I did it to avenge an attempt on my life by my boys, the death of my mother, and injustice in society." The letter went on to describe how the children were strangled to death, dismembered, and their bodies disposed of. The letter also gave the address of Javed's villa. Stunned by the contents of the letter, the media began to look into the case, whereas the police initially thought this could well have been a hoax. Upon the realisation that this was definitely not some twisted prank, a manhunt ensued, one of the largest Pakistan had ever seen, and dozens of suspects were detained.
Sorry, but how do you read a letter like that and think, do you know what, it could be a hoax?
It's wild because you think it's so bad, you have to investigate it. But they were also looking at it as, it's so bad, it clearly can't be true.
Yeah, but you imagine if they'd have gone, clearly a hoax, not even going to look at it.
Yeah, or is it officers that he had kept close and they're like, oh, don't worry about it, it's clearly a hoax. As soon as they saw the address, you know. In the letter, Javed had stated that he planned to drown himself in the Ravi River. And police did search the Ravi, but found nothing. So, was this just a game of cat and mouse to Javed? Or was he actually planning to attempt suicide before capture? I personally believe this was part of his plan. About a month had passed before he made the decision to reveal his true identity. On the 30th of December, Javed entered the office of the Daily Jang newspaper and proclaimed, quote, "I am Javed Iqbal, killer of 100 children." He went on to say, quote, "I hate this world. I am not ashamed of my action and I am ready to die. I have no regrets. I killed 100 children.
So, right, you know how you'll get, say, a serial killer who killed, I don't know, they know they've killed 5 or 6 people. And then once they have them in custody, they're like, oh, there's at least 100 more.
Mm-hmm.
But with this guy, is it like, there's 100?
Yes.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's one of those, they don't have the exact number, but I'd say it's fairly accurate.
Fucking hell.
After his initial confession, the staff in the office kept him talking as they alerted authorities. 100 soldiers surrounded the building, and Javed was arrested. He claimed that his motive for the murders was revenge. After Javed had previously been accused of the sexual assault of a young boy earlier in the 90s, he claimed that he'd been beaten severely by the police. Quote, "I was so badly beaten that my head was crushed, my backbone broken, and I was left crippled. My mother cried for me. I wanted 100 mothers to cry for their children."
Fucking hell.
Yeah, pretty heavy shit. And he goes on to say that he had no regrets and that he could have gone on to kill 500 children. Quote, "But the pledge I'd taken was of 100 children, and I never wanted to violate this." Right?
There's not, I can't say anything.
Yeah.
I've got no...
Well, when he says, I didn't want to violate this, it's this weird moral code to him.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck everything else, but you know, I've took this pledge, lads, and I really want to...
I don't want to take the piss.
Yeah.
The bit I don't get, though, so about making 100 mothers cry.
Mm-hmm.
Why is sexual assault come into it?
Yeah.
If it's just to, like, get rid of the children.
Yeah.
Why ain't it just a straight kill? Why is there more to it?
I can't say for sure if he sexually assaulted every child that he had murdered. But I would take a guess there was a high percentage that he did. And like you said, yeah, it's all just bullshit. And it's your own fucking, like, jumped up little prick way of being like, I was wronged.
Yeah.
You know, off.
So these 100 kids, what time frame are we talking? Start to finish? Like how many years?
Less than a year.
What?
Mm-hmm. Less than a year.
Fucking hell.
He started in 1998 and finished in 99.
How did they not think they were a plague or something?
When police go to search his home, they find bloodstains on the walls and floors. They find chains which have been used to strangle the children to death. The skeletal remains of two children, multiple vats of acid, and piles of children's clothing. There were two vats which still contained the partially dissolved remains, and a note left which stated, quote, "The bodies in the house have deliberately not been disposed of so that authorities will find them."
So this guy, you know how you get them people that can't take the blame for anything?
Yes.
This is the cop's fault. In his eyes, the police caused this.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, he came from a fairly comfortable upbringing.
Mm.
He was treated quite well. He was kind of a daddy's little prince.
Yeah.
And he's just a little shite, basically.
Yeah.
I can do what I want. I'm so great.
Yeah.
Type of guy we're dealing with here. And yeah, like you said, nothing could possibly have been his fault. And he was wronged at one point.
Yeah.
So he can do whatever the fuck he wants to correct it in his mind.
Mm.
Javed also presented police with an extremely detailed diary that he had kept, as well as a 32-page notebook. The diary contained the names, ages, and photographs of these kids, all boys, aged between 6 and 16. The sexual assaults and murders were recorded in meticulous detail, not just to the date, but at the time of the murder. The amount of acid needed to dispose of their bodies was also listed, and the cost to do so. Quote, "In terms of expense, including the acid, it cost me 120 rupees to erase each victim."
See, why did he write that down? It's not like he can claim it back on tax as a fucking business expense. That's what you do with stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Why does
it's
he need...
It's creepy level of detail.
Yeah.
Mm. He's enjoying keeping the records of what he's done, it seems.
He's not trying to claim back on that end of tax year.
Also recorded in his notes, quote, "My count has reached 100. With the grace of God, my mission is complete. Tears roll down my cheeks. I will make sure that my mission and my message reaches the world." There was also handwritten notes across the walls of his home. One of the notes read, quote, "Today, November 25th, 1999, I've decided to commit suicide. Yesterday, I killed my employee Sanjeed and incinerated his body in the container, so that he could be punished for the theft and for disturbing me again and again. I can now go to sleep in the depths of the Ravi."
Oh, so he was going to top himself in river then?
Well, possibly, but he also wanted police to go to his home. So did he want them to find these notes and assume he had, so he could bugger off elsewhere?
Yeah.
Because he did go on the run for about a month.
But he didn't leave the country?
No.
Which I find strange, because the money he had.
I can't say for sure. I think it was kind of more of a cat and mouse to him. You know,
like
why?
A game.
Yeah. Why did he, you know, constantly make all these comments about suicide and then went on the run? And then after a month, he finally came forward and said, "Yeah, it's me, lads. I'm the one doing it." Was he enjoying it? Was he wanting to see all the media coverage?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. Another note stated, quote, "The five sacks lying in the corner of this room contain the clothing of 100 victims, while the remaining three sacks contain 85 pairs of shoes belonging to them."
Well, that don't add up.
All details of the murders are contained in my diary and the 32-page notebook that have been placed in the room. This is my confessional statement. Another read, quote, "One more death after the killing of 100. Does not make much difference. The world will remember this mode of revenge. These bodies flow through the sewer, just like my blood will." Or there's also this note which was left, and is seemingly an attempt to rationalise his killings. Quote, "This area has turned into a breeding ground of crime. Runaway children seek refuge here, and learn to commit murder, theft, pickpocketing, and get involved in immoral activities. If the government can't stop this, then ordinary people will have to find their own solution, as I did."
Right. So I'm picking up on something here. So he initially said he was doing this because he wanted 100 mothers to cry. But now he's saying that part of the reason why he's doing it is because this area is out of control,
mm-hmm.
and there's basically motherless kids.
Mm-hmm. It was an area where quite a lot of kids, you know, if they had run away from home or they needed to try and make money, that they would go into this area, you know, and try and sell goods and what have you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so he's not saying it's like the parents got rid of him, like the...
He's basically saying all of these kids are turning to crime.
Okay.
And he's basically, you know, his vigilante side is coming out here, which who the fuck asked you?
Yeah.
The month before Javed's sentencing, he recanted his confession and pleaded not guilty.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He claimed that he had created the story to highlight the issues that face runaway children and that his statements to police were made under duress. Quote, "Whatever I wanted to say has been distorted. I have seen the children being killed. I am an eyewitness to that. I was considered an insane person, but I beg that my point of view must also be heard. I consider myself as a culprit because I've been made a culprit by police." Again, it's not his fault, lads, you know?
Fucking idiot.
Prick. Although there was a lack of forensic evidence to link to Javed, and the number of victims was yet to be confirmed, the evidence was starting to pile up against him, as well as others who can corroborate his previous claims. Given his use of chemicals in the murders, he was brought before an anti-terrorist court, but it was argued that his use of chemicals was to dispose of the bodies, not as a means of murder.
Doesn't matter. You've murdered them before you've put them in it.
It's a complex argument as well, because it's kind of like, I mean, you were terrorising the streets of Lahore. Like, I mean, but I mean, in reference to the use of chemicals, you know.
I think they need to pick their arguments. Like, they need to pick a battle. I don't think that's something to hone in on.
On the 16th of March in the year 2000, and after a two-month trial that heard testimonies from over 100 witnesses, Javed was convicted for the murder of 100 children. During proceedings, Javed was described as not a man, but a beast. As he was led out of the court, he repeatedly pleaded his innocence. Three teenage boys were found guilty as his accomplices, the youngest of which was just 13 years of age.
Fucking hell.
They were all found guilty of helping to dispose of bodies, as well as harbouring Javed while on the run. There was another person who was being questioned in connection to Javed and his crimes, but while being interrogated, the man jumped out of the window to his death.
Fucking hell.
Mm. It makes you wonder just how many were complicit.
What's that mean?
How many were involved.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Javed's sentence was a major source of controversy. He was sentenced to death, but the method chosen drew major concern. He was to be executed by strangulation using an iron chain, and for his body to be dismembered and dissolved in acid in front of the victim's parents. And the judge specified that he should be strangled 100 times and for his body to be cut into 100 pieces before being dissolved in acid.
How do you strangle someone 100 times?
Each count to represent each child that he had harmed. His execution was to be carried out publicly, taking place in a park in Lahore.
You said hanging by chains. Even looking back in history, I've never heard of hung by chains.
It was what he had used.
Oh, okay.
So the sentence given was very kind of eye for an eye type of thing. It was influenced by Sharia law. Now, the legal system in Pakistan is complex. It's a mix of both common law from British colonization and Islamic or Sharia law. And there are both secular and religious courts. So, from what I gather, common law is sort of the basis, but a judge may consider and interpret points of Sharia law while presiding over a case, as Sharia is a primary for a lot of legislation in Pakistan. So the laws are predominantly from Sharia, but they are not an absolute, more of a framework. So, although Sharia law is present in Pakistan and does deal with some more serious offences, it's more of a moral or ethical code on how to live your life. Again, it is an incredibly complex legal system which I do not have full comprehension of, and I do apologise if my description is a bit vague or I'm misinterpreting anything. If I had to simplify to our understanding, it's church and state, and I suppose I would relate to the Catholic Church's influence over Ireland's legal system.
Right, okay.
A religious framework incorporated into law.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, with the sentence given, there is, of course, the glaringly obvious issue of human rights. One minister said, quote, "This will be challenged in the High Court. We are signatories of the Human Rights Commission. Such punishments are not allowed."
Where are the kids' human rights?
We've personally had this argument quite a lot. And I do take your point, but the legal system and law enforcement should be there to protect and serve, type of a thing. I don't believe it should be at their discretion of how a person is treated. If you're going to argue that, what makes one any better than the other? You're doing the same thing.
Yeah, but right, there's an old British saying.
Oh God.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Is that British?
Why wouldn't that be British?
Why is it British? That's used all over the world.
I don't think it is.
I'm not saying it's not. I don't know the origins, but I feel like you're just claiming it because you want to.
Well, I've heard it, like, in old British films and that, so. But yeah, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Like, he chose to do that to 100 people. Let it happen to him. Let him feel what they felt.
So you're in favour of a sentence?
Yes. So far.
Well, the sentence was... so far.
No, because you chop and change and you end up
changing... Oh, you mean in case I change your mind?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the sentence was also slammed as going against the Islamic tenets. The Council of Islamic Ideology stated that to desecrate the body would go against the teachings to respect the body of the deceased. And as this council is state-run to ensure that laws are in keeping with the Islamic tenets, it's wild that the sentence given was such a violation. Javed's lawyer also stated that he would be appealing the decision. Quote, "This sentence is not inevitable. There is no law which allows a person to be hanged publicly, to cut up the pieces of the body. It is against the constitution of Pakistan." So in Pakistan, executions are generally by hanging and carried out within the prison. It's not just the barbaric act of dismembering and disposing of his remains, but also the public aspect.
Yeah, he's going to have a good lawyer as well.
But in the end, none of this mattered. On the 9th of October 2001, Javed, as well as one of his accomplices, were found dead in their cells. Their causes of death were both reported to have been suicide, having used their bedsheets to hang themselves from the iron bars of their cells. They were found at 5 a.m. that morning, and it's thought that they had taken their own lives sometime between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. But the results of their autopsies tell a different story. There's bruising and signs of blunt force trauma. The extent of liver mortis was also taken into consideration. Blood had seeped from their nose and mouths, as well as cuts found to one of their tongues.
They've had a scrap.
You think that they've had a fight beforehand, yeah, and then took their own lives?
Yeah.
Well, Javed's lawyer had claimed that he had previously wrote to him stating that he was worried that he would be killed by prison authorities. And the guard who was on duty at the time of the murder said, quote, "I was asleep when the incident took place."
What incident?
Their deaths.
Oh. The only bit what doesn't make sense about that is why would the prison officers kill them when it didn't matter which way it happened, they were getting executed?
Anger? Anger at what they had done? I mean, the crimes he perpetrated were some of the worst imaginable.
Yeah. Like, imagine if one of the kids' parents worked at the prison.
Well, sexual assault and murder, horrific. And he also chose to do this to more vulnerable members of society.
Yeah.
Javed's body went unclaimed, with his brother stating, quote, "We have nothing to do with him."
Good man. I was going to ask about the siblings. Because there's eight of them.
Yeah, as far as I can see, they're literally like, you know, the day we found out about what he was doing, nope.
Yeah.
Done. So that's Javed gone, albeit under suspicious circumstances. But what about the families of these children? The parents of known missing children were contacted. They were shown photographs and items of clothing found within Javed's home in an attempt to identify the children. Although many were able to be identified, their remains were unable to be recovered, depriving these parents of a final goodbye to their kids. Televised footage shows distraught parents sifting through heap piles of children's clothing.
Oh, that'd be rough.
Yeah, I mean, it's unimaginable because you've got to, if you put yourself into their situation,
yeah,
you're searching through these items and, you know, you're praying that you don't find something belonging to your child, that they didn't have to go through this.
Yeah.
But you're praying that you find it and you know where your child is or what happened at the same state, like some form of closure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, that's rough, putting cameras on it.
You're filming people that are going to be at the lowest point they've probably ever have or ever will experience.
Yeah.
It's all these parents who are in solidarity with the next for the most agonizing reason possible. Some of these children had been missing for over 6 months before their parents had reported them missing. Campaigners in Pakistan stated that only a fraction of child abuse cases ever come to light because of the taboo around discussing the issue. Quote, "It is seen as a malaise of the West. No one admits to it, let alone does anything to help." Not only were these children overlooked, but due to Javed coming from a background of wealth, privilege and status, it afforded him a certain level of protection. But given how easy it was for Javed to commit these crimes, and within a very short period of time, it makes you wonder, how many further victims could there have been had he not decided to turn himself in? And that is the case of Javed Iqbal.
Well, that last bit you just said, there weren't going to be, he said, "I'll get to 100 and I'll stop."
Mm. Okay, it makes you wonder, had he not made that pledge to himself, how many, for how long? You know, it seems as though he could have had some officers in his pocket. He had money.
Mm.
He was also in a location where kids are frequently overlooked.
Yeah.
And fall through the cracks.
Oh, no, that was rough. But I still don't get, like, it just all sounds like excuses. I did it because I took a kick in from law enforcement.
I mean, I don't want to go back to Haddon Clark, but it's a similar type of thing. It's that's what was said about him as well. It's the kind of, well, because this happened, I had to do this and I felt as though, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, there's your feelings and then there's fact.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I took a kick in from law enforcement, so I'm going to murder 100 boys.
But I mean, I'm going to challenge you on that because you previously stated, you know, you're in favour of his sentence. You think it's okay. You think the eye for an eye type of logic. I do not agree with that at all myself.
But what has 100 boys got to do with him taking a kick in from law enforcement?
Yeah, but by your logic, there is no parameter of good and bad. It's literally do something, do the exact. If you do something, the exact same thing has to be done back. Yeah. I don't agree with that. And there's no difference. There's no, how can you say he is evil and he is this and he is that if you're wanting to do the same thing back to him?
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Right.
What's separating us from these people then?
The difference is he chose to do that to 100 boys. Law enforcement and the government are only doing it to him because he did it to 100 boys.
I get that, but they don't have to choose that sentence.
You don't have to, but it's to make a public display. They don't want that to happen again.
And you think the public execution and dismemberment is going to stop it? No, like, I'm not like trying to challenge you as such on that point.
Mm.
I'm asking your genuine opinion. Do you think that will deter people?
Well, people think twice.
So, yes.
You know, it's the same as, so there's some countries where if you get caught nicking, still to this day, there are some countries where if you get caught nicking, they'll chop your hand off. There's a lot more. I bet you there's a lot of people who.
Yeah, but if you're gonna make that claim, do you actually know what countries that's ever happens in?
I did read it somewhere. Which,
I mean, we've all heard that, but I couldn't say if that's true or not, or how frequent that has ever happened in more modern day. You know, because it could be the case of like this case where a judge might be like, right, that's the sentence. And people are like, no, you can't just.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, the eye for an eye thing.
Mm.
I think you're more in favour of like a vigilante type of justice than I am. I've never really been okay with it. I understand the urge and people wanting to, but I think overall, no. I think it's too slippery of a slope.
Yeah, like, vigilante is definitely a slippery slope, but it is still needed sometimes. You know, there is times where there is a problem. And, you know, the justice system doesn't do its job.
Doesn't yeah, of course,
do it justice.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. It's like, right, well, I'll fucking do it.
I do get what you mean. But I feel like a lot of the time I've seen cases where the person doling out the justice maybe shouldn't be. You know, do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's maybe not the best intended result. It's more their own anger.
Yeah.
If you get me.
Yeah. No, I get you. I think we'll move on before I get us cancelled.
I do actually have a film for us to watch.
Okay.
Javed Iqbal, The Untold Story of a Serial Killer. Now, this film was initially banned, but after a bit of pushback, it was released in 2023. So basically, obviously, it's his story. But I think it was more so to do with how the police were being portrayed in it. Okay. That it was initially banned, but yeah.
I'll make a deal with you. We get a takeaway tonight and we'll watch it tonight.
You really want a takeaway?
I really want a takeaway tonight.
I think you'd watch that anyway.
No, I would.
Like, it's not a documentary, it's a film.
Yeah, I know, you just said.
I know, but you'd watch that. It's not like a horror film as such. It's more biographical.
Yeah. You've just said
I'm trying to make a deal with you, as if you buy me a takeaway, I'll watch that for you. But you would watch it anyway.
Yeah,
is my point.
I would.
It's ridiculous.
Right. Oddity.
I've got something to ease us out of that fucking brutal case.
Okay.
Bizarre headlines. I thought for Oddity today, we'd take a look at some odd headlines that actually made it into the papers.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're
some of these aren't going to shock me.
You're ready for it.
Yeah.
So, first up, we have Vengeful Man Barks Like Dog. 27th of March, 1950, Asheville, North Carolina. A man appeared in court to appeal a $10 fine he received for sitting on his neighbor's porch during the night and barking like a dog. He argued that his actions were simply retaliation to their dog's barks, which had kept him awake all night.
My own mother barks.
What?
Well, she don't bark. She growls.
Where are we at here, Neil?
No. Like, that's what my father says anyway. So say if my mum and dad get into an argument, yeah? My mum, mm-hmm. if she's got nothing to say, but she still wants to say something,
mm-hmm.
it's usually the case. She'll like grit her teeth together and shout something, but it just sounds like a growl. And then my dad will be like, don't fucking growl at me. And then he starts growling back at her. And I was seeing this, you know, in my teenage years.
So you were raised by wolves is what you're telling me.
I've always been called a feral child.
Mm, starting to understand why.
Yeah.
Mm. Next we have He Wouldn't Kiss the Cat. Published on the 14th of May, 1950. London, England. The divorce courts heard of a case where a husband declined the requests of his wife. She required that upon her husband's return from work every day, that he kiss her first, then her sister, and finally the cat. He refused her demands, so she left him. He was granted a divorce on the grounds of desertion.
See, I get it the other way around. You walk in,
mm-hmm.
you kiss Norman,
yeah.
you kiss Ty,
mm-hmm.
and then I might...
Get a wave.
Yeah.
You all right?
She usually just nods at me and goes, you all right?
any posts today or...
This isn't a lie. This is not an exaggeration. Every day, if she's still in bed asleep and I've got up to do some editing because I can't sleep, if I'm sat on the settee editing, she will come in, she will give Norman attention, she'll give Ty attention, and then she pats me on the fucking head.
I do sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not meant to be like a condescending thing. I can see your hands are busy, you've got the headset on, I don't disturb you, so I just like, bless you, my child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just pats me head.
I used to literally say that, didn't I?
Yes.
Bless you, my child. Oh, damn it, once name changed. Published on the 6th of June, 1913, Richmond, Kentucky.
Someone's called Oh Damn It.
A man by the name of Orlando Dammit has said that he is seeking to change his name, stating that he cannot decipher whether people are calling him or simply venting their frustrations. I mean, fair enough. Yeah. You know, I see his point. You ready for the next one?
Go on.
Justice Swift Among Squirrels. 27th of December, 1943, Knoxville, Tennessee. A man watches a squirrel run down a patch with a bun in its mouth and dig a hole and then bury the bun. A second squirrel, who had been watching from the trees, appears, goes to the exact same spot and digs up the bun. The first squirrel appears back at the scene, just in time to witness the theft. The man says of the incident, quote, "It was worse than any catfight I've ever seen. That thief got the beating of its life."
I've actually thought about doing that before.
What?
If I was to ever see...
Causing ruckus.
No. I'd nick it.
Oh.
I were going to do it like... So if I saw a squirrel burying a nut or whatever it is, wait for it to fuck off and then I'd quickly go and take it. So it'd lose its mind. It'd be like, I'm sure I buried it here. I did actually think about
that's
doing...
That's twisted.
Well, no, it was more of... I was going to do an experiment just to see what it'd do.
You're a gaslighting little fuck.
Wish I'd never taught you that word.
Squirrel gaslighting shit. Now, we've got a throwback to one of our previous oddities. Children not fish, so can't be mailed. 16th of June, 1920, Des Moines, Iowa. The postmaster of Washington had received two applications for permission to ship children through the parcel post. He contacted the first assistant postmaster for a decision to be made whether this should be allowed or not. It was decided that children are not within the classification of, quote, harmless animals, and therefore are not mailable.
That was mad, that one.
Posting children?
Yes.
Yeah, no good. And last but certainly not least, husband and dog gone. Just wants dog back.
Fuck the husband.
Yeah. Published on the 10th of May, 1954, Dallas, Texas. After the disappearance of her husband, along with her Chihuahua puppy, a woman told the police, quote, "I don't care if my husband ever comes back. I just want to find my dog."
Fuck's sake.
See, the thing what I get from all of these headlines is that people were just as petty back in the day. We just happened to have the ease of access to their stupidity with social media.
Yeah. Like with that last one, that actually just reminded me of a video I saw the other day. So the video, it looked like an old news report.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a woman being interviewed. Now, it starts in the mid-interview, so you don't know what the interview is about.
Mm-hmm.
But she says something about, "I wish they hadn't been killed and it was my son. I wish my son had been..." That was it. "I wish my son had been killed." Her son is like an 8-year-old boy stood next to her. And she's there saying, I would rather my son have died that day.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'll try and find it for you. Yeah.
I feel like you're confusing something here.
Absolutely not.
I've seen a clip of a guy at like a football game or something who said he'd sacrifice his second son or something like that. Not his first, but his second.
This is an American woman being interviewed by a news reporter.
Okay.
And an 8-year-old boy is next to her and she says, I would have rather my son had have lost his life that day. That's what she said.
Did she give any kind of a explanation?
No, that's the context. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think soon enough, news headlines, it won't be a thing because it's just going to go It's just going to be social media posts.
Well, they will have, you know, digital newspapers. A lot of them are. There's a lot of media outlets that are just online now.
They won't have newspapers because they'll just get, say, go to the website, go to the Sun.
Yeah, but they have headlines and titles for the articles.
Yeah. So that's your headlines. Yeah.
Mm. I'll still enjoy reading them.
I've never really read a paper.
Ever?
Not really.
Well, what about, we have articles online.
I used to go to the sports section. No, if there's too many words, I turn it to you.
Yeah, you do actually, yeah.
Even if a listener messages a big, long message to me, I'll be like, Megan, read that for me.
Yeah, you're quite lazy, aren't you?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Did you know that parents rank teaching financial literacy as the toughest life skill? That's where Greenlight comes in, the debit card and money app made for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and track spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn how to earn, save, and spend responsibly, while parents have peace of mind knowing smart money habits are being built with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight. That's greenlight.com/trygreenlight.